So for the last couple of weeks, we've been in the book of Ruth. We've heard some of the story of how Ruth and her family, husband Elimelech and sons, ended up in Moab. We learned about the death of those men and how the two sons were married to these two Moabite women, who then had a discussion last week as we discussed together with Naomi about returning to Bethlehem. And one of them, Orpah, decided to stay in Moab and go back to live in the home of her mother and to worship in the way of the Moabites. And then Ruth decided that she was going to stay with Naomi. And she committed deeply to Naomi, not only to life with her, but to be buried in the same place as Naomi, to worship the same God that Naomi does, and to live alongside Naomi is what Ruth committed to. And that's where we pick up the story as we're in Ruth, the end of chapter 1. So if you're following along, please, you're welcome to open up your Bibles. I'd love for you to do that. Or if you like to use technology to be in the Bible, you're welcome to do that as well. And I won't assume you are on social media if you're scrolling and that you're bored already with the sermon. I hope that's not the case. But find Ruth. It's up toward the beginning of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth. If you get much beyond that, switch on back and we're in Ruth, and it's a little bitty book in between, right after the book of Judges. So we're in this book of Ruth, and we find Ruth and Naomi getting ready to travel. They're on their way to Jerusalem, or to Bethlehem. And we see that in verse 19. So it says, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem." And we catch that one little sentence. But that was probably a week's journey. That was probably about a week's walk. That quick little sentence, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem." We read it in about 8 seconds. But it was probably a week's journey. 50 plus miles, depending on where exactly they were in Moab. And they had to walk it. They were probably not just walking along, swinging and being able to walk fast, because they were carrying their life with them. They were carrying everything that they needed to have with them on their backs or carrying it along. They were swinging along, and it probably took them about a week to make it to Bethlehem. And it says, continuing in verse 19, "And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them." The whole town was stirred because of them. We had a little discussion earlier. The staff on Mondays gets together. Our church staff gets together on Mondays, and one of the things that we do is pray together, but one of the other things we do is just read the scripture that we're going to be working on throughout the week. And we were having quite a discussion this week about what that word stirred means. Was that a stirred in the sense of, hey, we're really happy to see Ruth or Naomi back to Bethlehem? Or is that a stirred in a different sense? How does that play out? And so I spent a good bit of time looking at that word stirred and where it played in the scriptures and how it played out and how it was used. And that word stirred actually gives a negative connotation. If you go right back to it, it gives a negative connotation. So remember what's going on. Naomi and her husband and sons left Bethlehem when the going got tough. They left Bethlehem because there was a famine. This Bethlehem, remember, is the name of Bethlehem means bread house. It was a huge agricultural center, and lots of food was produced there. Enough that it was called Bread House. And they left. They left when the going got tough. They left when things were hard. And they went to another country even that wasn't looked upon happily by Israelites. They went off and they did their thing. Add to that they were one of the most respected families. They were one of the families, they were part of this culture, this Ephraimite family sentence or this family structure, a clan of people that lived in and around Bethlehem that were well respected, they were looked upon, they were probably ones who had resources. They had to have resources probably to leave, didn't they? And so they left. They took their stuff with them and left. And so now we see Naomi back. She's back. She doesn't have her husband or her sons with her. And on top of that, she's bringing with her a foreign woman who also has need. Their fields haven't been tended. If their home was still there and unoccupied, it hadn't been taken care of for 10 years or so. So they didn't have anywhere to really live. They didn't have any fields with which had been planted, because we're hearing now soon that this is the very beginning of the barley harvest. Their fields, if they were being used, were planted by somebody else. Otherwise, they're fallow. There's nothing in their fields. And now they're back, kind of as the famine is over, here comes Naomi back with another dependent. And what are they going to do? Where are they going to live? Who are they going to live off of? They left us, is what people are thinking. And so as we see stirred here, I don't think this is at least for maybe most folks in town, I don't think this was all right, Naomi's back. I think it's Naomi's back. The one that took off, this Naomi is back. And she didn't bring back her husband and her son, her husband and sons. She just is back. And she's got somebody else that we now have to take care of, because it was written in the law that widows and folks who were in need were to be taken care of by the larger group. They're just coming out of the famine. They haven't had extra in a long time. None of the folks that lived in Bethlehem had extra. And so now do you hear the stir? Now do you feel the stir as they come back to town? That word stir also has a root meaning. The root that it's based off of is the same root as the word abyss or the place where Satan lives. It's that same root, that same issue is being discussed there. So just kind of keep that in mind. So everybody was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi? Is this Naomi? Is this the sweet?" Remember, Naomi means sweet. Is this the sweet, the joyous? Is this Naomi the sweet? And she said to them, "Don't call me sweet. Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara." Mara means bitter. She said to them, "Don't call me sweet. Call me bitter. Don't call me joyous. Call me bitter." And then I think it's interesting for us to spend a little time. Because look at what Naomi says. Remember, we were talking last week. If you weren't here with us, I'll catch you up just a little bit. We were talking last week about how Naomi really felt that this was something that God was doing to her. This was something that she felt like God was extending his hand against her, like he did in judgment of people, or like he did as he was extending his hand against different armies that were getting ready to face Israel. Naomi felt like God was actively against her. And that's part of this bitterness that we get, right? And it says, "The Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." This is still verse 20. "I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" I want you to pay attention to those two words, Almighty and Lord, right there. They're done twice in these two verses, but I want you to pay attention to those two words, Almighty and Lord. I want you to think now, what are the names of God that you can think of? What are the different names that we call God? We call him God. We read in the scriptures about God. We read about Yahweh. We read about the Creator. We read about all these kind of different character traits, but also names of God. Remember, names mean something different probably in this culture, definitely in this culture, than they do probably for us, you know? My name's Kurt. I hope I don't go with that one, because that just means I'm short-tempered and abrupt, and I hope that's not how you experience me. But they would have thought that character went with that name. They would have thought that character went with that name. And so we've got to pay attention to names, but also to name changes. And Naomi is saying, my character is changing. What you know of me is changing because of the way that God is actively against me. And we see how she sees him. So the names of God that we know of. And then have you ever heard of the name of God too? El Shaddai. Have you heard of that name? If you are an Amy Grant fan ever, you probably know that name. She sings a song called El Shaddai. The El Shaddai is God Almighty. El Shaddai is God Almighty. When we see Almighty right here, it's just the word Shaddai. It's just the word Shaddai. And it really says more, instead of God, it really means mysterious force. So Naomi is saying this mysterious force had dealt bitterly with me. She's saying, I'm not sure what relationship I have with this mysterious force. I'm not sure what I think about this mysterious force. I'm not sure how that all plays together. How do I work this system, this mysterious force? And then it says, verse 21, I went away full, and the Lord right there, Yahweh, that's Yahweh, this God who is supposed to love and be present and personal with people, this God who's, when I say a personal God, I don't mean it in terms of I get to define the God, but a God who personally knows me. That's the God we worship. That's Yahweh. That's the God that took time creating each one of us. And so she says, and this personal Lord has brought me back empty. This personal God has brought me back empty. Do you catch some of the sarcasm? Do you catch that bitterness that she's feeling? Let's read it this way again. Call me Mara, call me bitter, for this mysterious force has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and this personal God, this loving God, this creator God, has brought me back empty. Do you hear the switch? Do you hear how she's switching back and forth there between these names of God and how she feels about it and how she feels like that character is playing out? And then she says, continues, why call me Naomi? Why call me sweet when this personal God, this God that created, this Yahweh, this personal Lord has testified against me, and this mysterious force has brought calamity upon me? Do you hear her feeling of being lost? Do you hear that continued? Remember, we talked a little bit last week about this hopelessness that she had. There's hope because she said, I've heard he's walking in Bethlehem. I heard he's there. He's visited, so we're going back. There's some kind of hope, but there's this hopelessness. Do you hear it here? Have you felt those feelings of hopelessness before, those feelings of being lost and not knowing what in the world God is doing? My wife will tell you that our third year of marriage was really hard. She'll tell you about that if you ask her. Our third year of marriage was really, really hard. We got, you know, you kind of have that first year of marriage, and for a lot of folks, that's that honeymoon phase. It goes really well. There's kind of nothing that kind of upsets too much. And then in our second year of marriage, she started a business, her art business that you know some things about. I started seminary. And we bought a new house. And so there was lots of new and lots of new challenges and lots of things to keep us busy and not settled in, but really kind of thinking about the new and trying new things. But then year three happened. And we had to settle into that new home and that new life and her new business and seminary and working. And it got really, really hard. It got really, really hard. And I remember thinking things sort of like what Naomi's experiencing here, not the same way. I didn't lose her. I didn't lose my children. That's a way different setup. But I think sometimes we've got to take what we're reading in the scriptures and try to gear that to what are our experiences? What is that experience of our own that we have like that? And so I remember wondering sometimes, pulling into the driveway and thinking, I know she loves me because I see her car and she's still here. But I have no idea why she would like me. I have no idea. It's hard, isn't it? Have you been in those places before where you're wondering, maybe it's not in your marriage, maybe it's with school, maybe it's with different family situation, maybe it's the way that work has gone. I know folks who've lost their jobs and may feel that way. Like, what in the world, Lord, are you doing? I'm feeling bitter about that. I'm feeling angry about that. I'm feeling like that's a really harsh thing. And you hear Naomi right here complaining. And she's complaining out loud about that. And she's complaining to those around her and telling them what they feel, what she feels. But she's doing that in a way that's also telling God what she thinks and how she feels about that. And you know what? That's okay. That's okay. I've heard it said, and I've had folks with wisdom tell me, you know what, you can complain to others, but really complain to God, because number one, he can take it. And he wants to know how you feel and what you think. He does already, but he wants you to know that he's there with him. And so that's what Naomi's doing. She's saying, this mysterious force that I don't understand and that I obviously can't know, because I can't understand why he would cause me this bitterness and reach his hand out against me, he's brought this calamity. And so we see next that Ruth and Naomi returned. And I want you to watch along here. We see in verse 22, and it says, Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, returned from the country of Moab. You hear Moabite, Moab, Ruth the Moabite. You hear Moabitess go through here. It says it like six or seven times in this really short stretch. It's like the author is really trying to say, she's from Moab, she's from Moab, she's from Moab. There's Moab over there, and we need to hear that. What is happening with this idea of her being a resident alien? What is it that it is for her being an out-of-towner, and how does that play in? So keep that in mind as we continue to talk this morning. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from Moab, you're hearing the repetition, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. The barley harvest happened for two or three weeks, and then another two or three weeks later, the wheat harvest happened. So this is just a huge time of celebration and singing. You'd have been walking along the fields and the roads and heard people celebrating, especially after such a famine had happened in Bethlehem for so long. And this was a big time of celebration. And then contrast that with Ruth and Naomi coming back. And Naomi saying, "Nah, I'm not sweet, I'm bitter." And Ruth clinging to Naomi through a relationship because she's got nowhere else to go. She doesn't know anyone else in town. And then we get to this transition at the beginning of chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband. So the writer, he's telling us that something else is going to happen here. He's a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. So he's related in family. And that's a key to us because family relationship, when there was a loss in the family, like a wife lost their husband, there was this relationship that needed to continue so that the family line continued and other family members would then take ownership of taking care of that person that needed help, but also if they were available, were asked to marry and continue that family line. So, but he's a worthy man. I think it's important for us to see that. This was a well-respected person in the right family line, and his name was Boaz. His name was Boaz. And I got to find it here, but Boaz isn't quite as well defined in terms of his name, but it means something like, in the name of Yahweh, I rejoice. His name means something like, in the name of Yahweh, I rejoice. And so he's this worthy man, and even his name speaks of the character that he has. And it feels like we're just getting into town, we're walking into town, and we're hearing this story. And then verse 2, and Ruth the Moabite, remember again, we can't forget that where she's from. We do not forget where she's from. Said to Naomi, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him whose side I find favor. So she asked permission of Naomi to go glean, to go get some food. They've just gotten to town. They have nothing. They have nothing. They have nothing. And she says, let me go glean. And that gleaning, as we read in Leviticus this morning, is something that was provided for. They could go get food. They could go find it amongst what was dropped, what was even set aside, what was left on the outside edges of the fields. I've helped my uncle, who's a farmer, and other family members pick corn and cut hay and all those things, and the only thing that was left was what was in the corners that the machine couldn't get into. But this sounds something more significant, that there was a bigger path left. There was the droppings were left for people to go and eat and have care. So Ruth asks, can I go do this? And then there's this little statement from Naomi that I think we could miss really easily. And we could miss its significance unless we stop. Look what Ruth says, or look what Naomi says. Go, my daughter. And we could miss what's going on there, I think. I did, until it was pointed out in my reading this week. Take a minute and think about who Naomi is with me. We've talked about it a little bit already, right? She's from a well-respected family. Probably from the areas, if it wasn't nobility, close to that. From the well-respected, the well-cared for. She's a Ephrathite. Remember we talked about that? This kind of well-respected clan of people, the kind of the family, the haves in town. She's gone away because it got tough. She's come back even emptier. We heard that, right? Call me bitter. And now look what she just had to agree for her daughter-in-law to go do. Look what she just had to agree for that daughter-in-law to go do. Basically go dig through the trash. Didn't she? She said, go, my daughter. And I think as we spend time looking at this, as we spend time sinking into this, this may have been rock bottom for Naomi. Like, it had been awful, right? It had been awful. It had been terrible. Lost her husband, lost her sons, had to come back, had to be, you know, in humility, come back to town, and there's this stir because I'm back in town, and, you know, what's going on with that? There wasn't this celebration of Naomi's return. And then very quickly, we've got to have food tonight to eat. Okay, I guess you got to go where the poor are, where the poor. And she hit that rock bottom. She hit that place of emptiness. Have you been there? Have you been in that place of emptiness? Have you been in that place where it feels like, what the world else could happen to me? What else could happen? I don't know what to do next. How do I process where I am right now? I remember being at NC State, and I took chemistry, and chemistry at NC State was in this classroom of like 400 people. And I went in, and the professor started talking, and I had done fine in school up to that point. I had done fine. I've done well in science. But I went to this class, and he was talking, and I promise you it was not in the same language. I had no idea what he was talking about. But it took me failing it twice to hit rock bottom enough to start studying. And I know that's a little funny story, but I think, what is that place that you got to, that rock bottom moment that caused you to start living it differently? Where's that moment for you, that turning point in your faith walk that maybe caused you to start looking for Christ somewhere? Cause you to start thinking in a different way. Like, I have to rethink my life. I have to rethink the way this thing is going. I think for Naomi, it was right there. I think she hit that bottom point. And after telling my parents that I'd failed chemistry the second time, I did start studying. Some of that was the fear of dad. Some of that was, it's no fun to fail. It's no fun to be at the bottom of that bowl, but it caused me to live life differently beyond that. So Naomi says, go my daughter. She knew that there was nothing else that was gonna make things changed. And so Ruth went, she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. She went out like that. In Jewish tradition, Rabbi Eliezer, who's a well-known rabbi in Jewish tradition, interprets this as a chain of events, this idea of being set out and going, or went and gleaned. He would say in that Jewish tradition, knowing the language and the history, that was probably a series of several days that happened. That wasn't a one-time go out, go glean. This was a series of days, and it's broken up that way. And so, who knows? I don't know if that's true or not. But what I do know is that starts to make some sense into what's happening here. So if you see that as a series, she went out, set out, and went and gleaned in a series of days in the field after the reapers. And along the way, she came to this field belonging to Boaz. She came to this field that was belonging to Boaz. And that's where she was. And as I read this, and as the commentators talk, it doesn't sound like, even though it's a little confusing, that she started doing any reaping until later. That this was a season where she came, and she came to this field where Boaz was, and he'd been introduced a little bit here, right? At the beginning of verse chapter 2. But she came to that field and then waited. She came to that field and waited. And then we get to verse 4. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." This was a man who believed deeply in who God was, and in this blessing that had happened to their fields and to their farms and to their families because the famine was over. And they're excited, and they're living into that excitement. But he came, instead of, "Hey, you guys that are supposed to be working hard, get working," he came and said, "The Lord be with you." This was certainly a kind of a rote greeting, but it also shows his character. and his relationship with these guys that are working for him, because they said, and he bless you too. And then the first question he asks is, whose young woman is this? Whose young woman is this? Now, before we get in a twist about that, we can't put our modern American 21st century minds on what that means. We have to be careful about that. That sounds like this possessive thing, right? This really, this patriarchal idea, or this antiquated deal. And it is, in a lot of ways, all of those things. But what he was saying is, who is this young woman here, and is she being cared for? Is she being cared for? This is somebody who we don't know. This is somebody who is not known yet, is not part of the family yet. Who is she, and are we taking good care of her? And then the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered. He says, she's this young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from Moab. So we're continuing to hear this whole idea of being from Moab, and that's being stressed to us. This foreigner, this alien, this person who's really, really different. But verse 7, look at verse 7. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she asked the question. If she asked the question of the foreman, he wouldn't have had the opportunity or the authority to say, yes, go ahead and glean. That was Boaz's right to say, yes, go ahead and glean. The foreman couldn't have said that. So Ruth must have waited for that to happen, which made her stand out. Everybody else would have just known that law, or would have just lived into the law of the that we read in Leviticus, and would have just gone around the edges and started doing what they wanted to do. But Ruth waited and showed respect. And look at this. He says, so she came and has continued their waiting. He's continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. She has stayed the course. She has been here. She has stayed focused. Church, are we people who, even in our struggles, stay the course? Are we people who patiently wait on the Lord's answer, as Ruth did? Are we people who, when we hit rock bottom, continue to think about, what is it, God, that you want me to do? How do I live in this tension of having difficult decisions to make, having difficult life to live, and still rejoice in the Lord and still think about who he is? Proverbs chapter 3 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he'll make your path straight. That's what Ruth is living here. She's saying, the one thing I know to do, the one thing I know to do is to go glean. And I'm going to wait on permission to do it, to show respect and to trust in the Lord with my whole heart. Church, as we have an opportunity to live lives, to struggle through them, to have high moments and low moments and moments where we've got work to do, are we a church and a family who's going to trust the Lord with our whole heart? Who's going to wait on the Lord to show us what it is that he has for us? To live into this understanding of who he is. Church, I want to challenge myself and I want to challenge you this week. Let's focus on God, the Almighty. Let's complain to him if we need to. Let's tell him our heart and tell him our struggles. He knows anyway. But let's tell him about that. And let's engage him significantly in deep relationship, because he deeply wants that kind of relationship with you and with me. And then let's wait patiently as he challenges us and grows us toward deeper knowledge of his life for us and his love for us. Will you pray with me? Lord, I thank you for this life you've given to us, this love you've given to us. Lord, will you cause us to be challenged, to draw nearer to you? Will you cause us to live into that love that you have for us? Lord, will you deepen us? Will you give us the patience and the courage and the strength that it takes to look to you in our very lowest of moments, but to know that you are the one who can and will change our lives to your glory and to your benefit and to ours. In your precious and holy name, amen.